Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
What day is it?
It's
a Friday yet?
Day. I don't actually know.
It's Friday.
I've lost track.
I checked. It is.
Wow. Okay.
It is hard to keep track when everybody you live with is also unable to keep track.
Right.
Is your wife leaving her house? Leaving your house?
Her house. Yes, we've quarantined in separate houses.
Oh, good. Well, I meant like one room is her house, and another room is your house, and then there's right. The DMZ where you. Does she go for her job? Does she get the privilege of going outside?
She does go to the office most days. She worked at home yesterday, which I think was only her second time since this has all started working at home. She gets very antsy when she works at home. Other than that, I mean. Her job is technically essential in that, like, you know, she works for a government agency and there's a lot of stuff that needs doing. And obviously they have like essential responsibilities. And I think a lot of her job is a lot easier if she is in the same office with the people that she is working with. But there are very few of those. Like, she goes into an office building that used to have lots and lots of people in it. And like her office now has 5 people in it. And they all have their own little offices, and they stand in their doorways and yell at each other across the common area or wherever.
Fun.
Isn't it?
She asked me yesterday because she was home, and she's like, if you didn't know, what would you say that I do all day? It's like, it sounds like basically just talk on the phone all of the time. Because she has a lot of meetings. So she's like in Zoom or on the phone or typing emails while on the phone. And that seems to be about 90% of it, which sounds terrible to me, but, you know, to each their own, I guess.
I mean, it's got to be done. I guess it's got to be done.
It's got to be done. Everything, you know, things have to keep running.
Just since this is the Six Colors podcast, I just want to point out that while we were talking there, I edited a story you wrote this week. Your quick tip about screen sharing with anybody via an Apple ID, which several people, since you used me as the example, several people think it's funny that you have to give me all the support. But that's because I don't know which key the Apple key is. I just don't know.
I know. There is. It's if only it were clearly marked in some way.
And I just I fixed something, and this is
for the listeners. Good.
So
I like
you
to
did.
Be,
a, you
it's
did,
fun to be called out on my mistakes in public.
No, well, this is a quirk, though. This is a very funny quirk. You put a path in a footnote, and the footnote is only so wide. And while these footnotes do scroll up and down, they do not scroll side to side. So I just removed the code styling and put some spaces in your path, just. To also, you misspelled the word utilities, but that you know, that's fine.
I blame autocorrect.
Yeah,
seems reasonable.
It probably said utilities. I think you mean utilities,
which that's is right.
Yeah, when you stand on a piece of wood and that's on a ball and you tilties.
Yep. Tilt back and forth.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a funny little quirk. That's all. That's all I'm saying is I clicked on the footnote and I was like, oh no, what happened there? And then I didn't do anything about it until just now because I was talking to you and thinking of the horrible footnote in your article. No, that's not true. I was looking to see what to talk about, and I decided to talk about footnotes. Footnotes are fun.
They are fun.
You have a lot of them in this little tip article, but it is.
I feel like footnotes.
It is also kind of nice to. I mean, footnotes are a little self-indulgent, but at the same time, like if you have an aside that's interesting, but you think that it's not essential, it is kind of nice to put it in a footnote because it's like if you don't care, just don't read that part, and just the article stands on its own. If you want more information, you click the little thing.
Or you just wait. The alternatively, what I do sometimes is wait till I get to the bottom,
yeah,
and then I read all the footnotes.
Can't do that on our site. I guess you can in RSS. In our RSS feed, you get the footnotes at the bottom. Yeah. On the website, they are little pop up capsule-y things, which I like.
Wait, don't you? But if you go to like if you go to like the article page, no, they're not even on the bottom of the article page. See, my template that I use in Mars Edit behind the scenes look put them on the bottom, but it may be an older template. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, it's There's a particular JavaScript that's running on. See, boy, while we're in the weeds, there's a JavaScript that's embedded on the pages of Six Colors that renders Markdown footnotes as these little pop-ups instead. So it rewrites the code and pulls them out of the bottom of the article and just puts them in their little pop-ups.
Little pop-ups.
It's true. But if you watch it from outside, you don't get that same experience. So
Right. Well, now we know. And knowing is half the battle.
Yeah.
Or some percentage of the battle, I guess.
I don't know. I'm looking at this page in reader mode, and it's very confused. Well, it doesn't have your name. It hid your name. It just says blank is a tech writer, novelist, and podcaster. I'm going to guess it's Dan Warren. That's my guess.
Probably explains why so many people attribute one of our articles to the other person.
Yeah, I mean, just the bylines that I keep putting in more places, but people don't care. I posted the newsletter piece that I wrote at the end of March on the website yesterday, just because I figure there's so many people who are at home and they don't know about digital services offered by libraries. And several people pointed out, and I did mention sort of like you or... In fact, I think it may be... Is it a footnote? It should... Yeah.
Is it a footnote?
No, I think I actually just added it to the main one, which is if you don't have a library card, don't despair. Many libraries will let you sign up for a card remotely so you can get started while you're staying at home. And I think I also said, even if your local library doesn't have OverDrive, you might have others. Anyway, there is a footnote. There it is.
It's all the way at the bottom.
Check out your nearby libraries. They may be happy to let you sign up for one of their library cards too. And I heard in Massachusetts, I think anybody can sign up for a library card in Massachusetts.
Well, there's two major library systems in Massachusetts because the BPL, the Boston Public Library, is on its own system. It has many, many branches throughout the city. And then most, if not all of the rest of the state is on the Minuteman Library Network. And those are all interoperable. So what's nice about that is you sign up there and, you know, usually it's the fact that I sign up and then I request if I want to request a book, it could be sourced from anywhere in the state, which is great.
Right.
Because you may not have that in your local library, but, you know, Cambridge might have it or Newton might have it or what have you. And then you get access to all their online resources. The BPL, I think, has even more online resources than the Minuteman Network. They have a ton.
If you're... If you're a resident of the state of New York, you can sign up with the New York Public Library and the Brooklyn Library, for example. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be in New York City.
Okay, yeah.
To do
Boston,
that.
I think almost anyone can sign up for a BPL card. I had one. I'm not sure it's active anymore. I've had a couple over the years. But I've definitely had one.
I could sign up for a San Francisco Public Library card, and they have all sorts of stuff that's digital services. But the point of the article, you know, is just your library offers digital services. This is great. Libraries offer these digital services and people don't know. And it's not just ebooks, it's magazines and it's movies and it's audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And that Libby app from OverDrive is actually a really great audiobook playing app. So you check out the audiobook and then you listen to it in the app. I put a Vorkosigan book in the screenshot. You're welcome.
Very nice. Good choice.
Yeah. So people should check out their local and regional and whatever else libraries, because there are all sorts of digital services that they offer if you're stuck at home and your library is closed.
It's interesting. I've been working on a project that involves ebooks, and I have learned a lot about ebook publishing in the last week and a half or so. And just all the resources that are available electronically, not just in your libraries, but via all these different stores. It's fascinating to see the way that all these things have publishing set up, because it's actually pretty easy on most of these platforms to go ahead and publish an ebook. The only problem with it ends up being there's, you know, a ton of major platforms and they all have slightly different rules about how they want things to work. There's not a standardized approach to it, obviously. So learning about that and tools to, you know, help produce something for those sites has been very interesting. It's been a learning experience, and there's a lot about this that I did not know going in, and my respect for people who have done self-publishing has gone even further up just because it's a lot of work.
Yeah. It is. We did those at Macworld for a while, and it's not easy. It's not like you push a button and then you're like, yay.
Yeah, I mean, done. Even getting, like, even the fact that, so I use Scrivener to produce ebooks sometimes, like I've sent ebook, early copies of my book to readers, and I'll use Scrivener to generate an EPUB or a Mobi or a PDF, whatever, like it can just output into pretty much any format. And you can actually make, Scrivener's great at this. It makes great looking ebooks. It actually, you know, handles all the formats pretty well. And it gives you a lot of power and control over, like, the small details, the metadata, all that stuff. And like every book that you can download, tools that check the, your EPUB to make sure that it's all valid and everything, because it's essentially, it's a bunch of HTML files and images in a zip file with some, manifest files or whatever, just telling it how everything sort of connects. And everything that Scrivener makes passes no problem. So that's like step zero. It's like produce a file. You want to go beyond that, there's a lot more stuff that needs to get done. I learned a lot about that, and I learned a lot about actually I ended up using Acorn for a lot of stuff in this project, and I'm impressed with how great that tool is. Like, I've used it for years, and of course Gus Mueller, we both know, who develops it, and I was never a big Photoshop user. Like, I've played around with it in the past, but I always felt like I was in over my head a little bit. And so, it was also overkill for a lot of the stuff I used to do at Macworld and Mac user was like, I just need to resize or crop an image or something like that. Acorn does that perfectly well. But Gus is a super smart guy, and he is also just, he loves working on stuff. He loves trying to push the envelope. And so, Acorn, which is still a fraction of the price of Photoshop, and the amount of things it can do is incredibly impressive. Like, I started trying to figure out, I was trying to, generate this text, and I kept having to, like, all right, I want to make the text, and then I want to move it and color it a specific way, but if I want to make tweaks after that, I have to sort of take several steps back to change something about the text so it's still in, like, a malleable state. And I was like, I wonder if there's an easier way to do this. And I sort of, like, went through the manual and all that stuff. I was like, oh, yeah, I can. Like, this is a shortcut. I can make the text in the shape already, and then it's still malleable and editable, like, even though I'm, like, reshaping it and resizing it. That's incredibly powerful stuff that, like, used to be easily, pro level creative tools in a tool that is pretty, pretty affordable. And yeah, I my estimation of that also grew this week.
I think you called it edible instead of editable, but that's great.
Editable. It's hard to say. It's also edible. It's delicious. Acorns are probably edible. I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh, they're horribly bitter. No, here in California, we learn all about it because the coastal Miwoks, the Native Americans, that was part of their diet. And, you mash the acorns.
Yeah, it turned into a paste.
Yeah, and it's apparently horrendously bitter, but it was all. But they had to eat it. Don't eat the acorns, kids.
Yeah, not recommended.
But they are edible.
But download the software.
But yes, that's right. Gus didn't mean to call it that because he finds it an unpalatable piece of software. That's not what he was going for there. Well, so that's been taking up some of your time this week then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you and I, we're used to covering news, and there's not a lot of news.
There's not.
So it's more of a, like, oh, let's, spend this time working on perhaps some more in-depth projects that aren't always things that are public facing immediately.
For sure.
You invest some time in
me too.
And turn it around. So yeah, it's been quieter week on the sort of technology news front, but there's stuff happening, churning underneath the surface.
I wrote, after like a week plus of avoiding it, I wrote my review of the Bridge Pro Plus and posted that, and 500 words, and it's like, which is not that many, because I don't get a lot of pleasure out of tearing a product apart.
Right.
And I have liked the products from this company in the past, so I don't feel great about doing it, but it also has to be done because people are going to consider this, and I've written positively about some of their existing products, and you know, I owe everybody my honest opinion about it, and it's just, you know, it's not even like a measured, like, it's good for these people and these people. It's not. It's just that trackpad that they built into this thing. You know, this iPad keyboard thing turns your iPad into your laptop. I've been using their regular old keyboard version for ages. They did a version with a trackpad. They really conceived of it during the early, like, pre-iOS 13.4 assisted touch era, where sure. mouse and trackpad support on the iPad was very limited, and they thought they could get away with this. And then Apple drops 13.4, which has this full-on trackpad support, and it supports the Magic Trackpad, and they've got their Magic Keyboard that's coming in May. And, you know, they got caught. This is my sympathy for them, which is they got kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. But I talked to them and I just, you know, maybe they can do some firmware stuff to make it work better. I'm unclear about that. But, you know, you should never, ever, 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 ever buy hardware that isn't very good, hoping that a software update right. to it will make it better we'll later.
It. Yeah.
Because oftentimes I've been there. Where it just doesn't come, or it comes a year later, and at that point, it comes in the new product.
It's moot, too, yeah. sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. everything's changed in a year, and who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. It's just not... I mean, I think the line that I wrote was, it's no good. I mean, I was like, that's it. It's like, it's no good. The trackpad is no good. It's bad. I wrote the article... while using the product, the keyboard is great, and I just started not wanting to touch the screen, mm-hmm. or I mean, not wanting to touch the trackpad, because every time I would go there, I'd be like, oh no, and I just avoid using it, which is like, that's how bad it is. That it's just it was like I'd move my finger on it and it would not respond, and then it would respond, yeah. so it was all jerky, and then the scrolling wasn't smooth, and
it's interesting. I think you know, clearly Apple puts a ton of engineering into its trackpads,
yeah,
arguably based on recent events more than in its keyboards. And I agree, like, and I've talked with a bunch of different people in the, you know, recent days, even, like, talking trackpads have come up a lot because of this, and the Magic Keyboard coming, and a lot of people, you know, pointing out the trackpads on PCs, a lot of them aren't great, or the Chromebooks apparently right. have pretty terrible trackpads, and it is interesting that nobody else seems to put the time and attention that Apple's put into that. And I wonder if part of it is because they haven't really divided their attention between, like, let's do a little bit of touchscreen and a little bit of trackpad, right? Like, I mean, they've also been doing it a really long time. And they pioneered a lot of the multi-touch gesture stuff on the trackpad too. But yeah, it does seem like I was trying to think about this at one point when people were talking about, like, third-party trackpads that you could buy and use with your iPad. And I was like, are there, like, there must be some, but nobody ever recommends any. Like, I have never heard anybody be like, buy this third party standalone trackpad for your device or your yeah. computer or your laptop, whatever. No, I've never seen that. Everyone either buys a mouse or, you know, if they're on a Mac, they use, like, Magic Trackpad, and that's pretty much it. So it doesn't shock me that, like, I have to imagine wherever they're sourcing those components for their trackpad for Bridge, it's just, you know, they're limited, right? Like, they probably don't have a ton of options for people who are building trackpads. And that technology is actually, you know, fairly complex when you get down to all the things that it can do, especially on the Apple platform.
Yeah, it's funny, but it is true. And I think the challenge is that the MacBook trackpad is the gold standard.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that it does things that a standard, like, my understanding is that, you know, trackpads like the Bridge trackpad, they're really just pretending to be mice.
Right.
And trying to translate the trackpad movements into mice. And Apple, this is why the Magic Trackpad didn't work before iOS 13.4. And everybody's like, well, that seems weird. It's like, yeah, that's because the Magic Trackpad isn't a mouse. Mm-hmm. It's got its own thing that it does, and Apple didn't support it. And now it's supported in 13.4, and it's glorious on the iPad, let me tell you. But it means that, yes, a company like Bridge, good luck. Right. Not that it can't be done. Logitech's got their thing that they're going to do for other iPads, and my guess is that it will be okay, but may not be as good as Apple's, but that's in collaboration with Apple.
Also, you know, Logitech is one company that has been making peripherals for decades.
Pointing devices, and, yeah, for sure.
Exactly. That's kind of in their wheelhouse.
So. Exactly. So, yeah. It's,
I was going to say the... So I, you know, every once in a while I'll try to help my wife with something on her computer or like, you know, using it to show her something. And the trackpad, it's a Lenovo. And I find the trackpad on it. It's, I guess it's okay. But like, I think the biggest problem for me is it doesn't have, it's the wrong scrolling direction. But yeah, it's not great. Like, I think there's like separate parts of the trackpad that do like separate things, and sometimes I always like venture too much over to the wrong side, and then you can't tap to click without bringing up the menu or something, and it's like, it's bananas. And then when she uses the Mac, she cannot figure out how to use the trackpad at all. So it, I mean, you know, any of these things are things that you get accustomed to if you use something long enough, but I've never found something that made me want to switch away from the Magic Trackpad. I love it. I've been a trackpad, all in on trackpad use for a decade more. And because for a long time, a MacBook was my only computer and it had a trackpad on it. And that's what I did. And I got so used to it that I never really want to go back to having to use a mouse or any other non-trackpad surface.
Yeah, I think I talked about this on upgrade recently, but like I used a trackball for a long time.
Yeah, I had one of those way back when.
And part of that actually I think came from using the trackball on the original. I had a PowerBook 160.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first laptop, and it had a trackball before Apple moved to the trackpads with the PowerBook 500 series. Yeah. And so that's how I started, and then I got a trackball at work, and I used that ADB trackball, and then it was a Kensington, and then trackball for a while. But when the laptops switched to trackpads, and that got better and better, and then came out with the Magic Trackpad, that was that moment where I said, oh, that's what I should be doing, because trackballs are bad at things like scrolling, and scroll wheel became a thing, and a really nice thing.
Oh, yeah, comparing those two things. Like, there are still some, like, they have, like, the trackpad, like, trackball and a scroll somewhere, and you're like, no, why?
Yeah, my last Kensington trackball had a scroll wheel around the ball. So you could roll like the ball, and then like a little ring that went around the ball.
I remember that.
And it was, you know, better than nothing. But like when I switched to the Magic Trackpad and I put like my two fingers down and was scrolling, I was like, oh yeah, this is what I want. And that idea there also is like 2/3 of the Macs sold are laptops. So why would you not want to kind of extend the laptop experience to the desktop as well? So here we are.
So then you don't have to transition going back and forth between a mouse and a trackpad, and it's much easier.
Yeah.
I every once in a while I think about picking up one of those dedicated controllers for some of the stuff I do in like Logic, you know, like the little shuttle controller type things. And I was like, that'd be cool. And then I was like, nah, trackpad works fine.
Yeah. I used to have a little jog shuttle, a little thingy. And I think, if I was video editing all the time, it's possible. Although even then it sort of felt like that was more a device for people who'd been using shuttle control so much on
like
traditional
a deck or something.
That's how I used those when I was in high school and a little bit in college. You know, those were these, you know, non-computer just editing decks with tape, and you would use those controls, and that's where they came from. And there's advantages to it because it's like you know, go back fast and now slower, and then you zoom in and you I'm not convinced that that's a better interface as much as it is familiar for people. And so for me, even though I had one of those, I didn't use it very much.
I think it's just the temptation of dealing with a thing that, you know, a toy that you want to play with, and then like, would I actually use this long term, or would it just be a thing that I use for a little while and then it collects dust?
Well,
and
some apps,
probably that.
Some apps have iPad apps that's what it is. Like Logic has an iPad app that is just a controller for Logic on the Mac.
I just want the tactile buttons.
Yeah, I hear you.
All that stuff, yeah.
I hear you.
But it's fine.
And there are people who have keyboards that the whole keyboard is just labels for like the Final Cut or Photoshop or whatever, like shortcuts.
I remember seeing those really colorful, like they would have all the colored keys or like stickers that you put on your color keys. I was like, that's bananas.
Good times. Good times. Well, this is when I usually say, well, what else is going on? But I think the answer is not a lot is going on.
A lot's going on.
A lot of going on, and yet not a lot going on. That's the story of our our era. I did. Dr. Drang did some math about the magic
about
keyboard.
The weight of the keyboard.
Well, Apple
yeah.
won't tell anybody what it is, right? That's the first thing. Is if you're saying why don't you ask Apple? I did twice. They have no answer.
Yep.
They're not going to tell you how much it weighs. But there was shipping information on Amazon about these two products, the two Magic Keyboards. The problem is we don't really know what it means. And I think it is the price or the weight of the thing, the box, including the thing inside.
Right. Yes.
So
it's almost always a shipping weight.
Dr. Drang, as he does, because he's an engineer, he does a lot of math. He's doing logarithms and, you know, cosines and derivatives and quadratic equations, and I don't know. I haven't taken math since college. And I didn't, and I skipped the quadratic equations part because I had already gotten an A in the class and I could skip the last chapter. So I did. I had a moment when I was trying to help my kids with math in high school. And I was like, why don't I know this? Oh, this is the chapter that I skipped because I had already clinched my grade. I got an A. I was doing okay. And I was just like, well, done. Drop your lowest test score. Going to be this one. Done. That's math. That's math. Anyway, Dr. Drang did some subtraction. This one. Just some subtraction. All that was
very
required.
Advanced subtraction.
And it's a beautiful little piece because he's like, aha, I am going to do some high level Apple punditry. And it's hilarious because I had this whole post went through my head of like, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to do that? And then I didn't have to because Dr. Drang did it. So he, based on the weight of the current smart keyboard folios, we can get the packaging of the weight of the packaging of the smart keyboard folios, and then use that as an estimate, which is probably low because it's probably a little bit heavier.
Right.
And his estimates were
it's like about a pound,
right? A pound for the 11 and a pound and a half for the 12.9. And it's probably a little bit less than that, but it can't be too much less, remember, because...
It's got to be... I mean, it's not got to be exactly the same weight as the iPad, but it's got to be
It's got to have some weight, or otherwise the iPad would flip it over.
Right. My point is, like, it doesn't have to be, like, at least as heavy as the iPad because of the angles and all that. But it's got to be close, probably.
Right. But the just for perspective, the Bridge keyboard... that everybody says is big and heavy is a pound and a half on the 12.9.
So it's lighter.
My guess is it's going to be, well, that would be Dr. Drang's calculations say it's the same, but I think he's right that the packaging on the Magic Keyboard will be heavier.
Sure.
Just a guess, the same or heavier. But yeah, these are not going to be light. They're going to be as light as Apple can make them. And Dr. Drang did another post, the internet's Dr. Drang. On his, you should go to leancrew.com. I link to him on Six Colors all the time, but he did another post where he actually looked at the vectors of the weight of the cantilevered thing, right? Like he's trying to figure out like how does the weight balance, and his point was that by having the iPad forward in the design as they've shown it, you're shifting the center of gravity closer toward the middle of the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because like the Bridge keyboard, it's on hinges at the back, which means all the weight is being translated down through the back and behind the back. So the center of gravity is like behind the keyboard.
Sure. Which means in the same way that if you like open a MacBook like all the way, it'll tip over because, you know, weight balancing.
Yeah, exactly. So... the, you know, what he did was look at it and say, okay, by shifting it forward even a little bit, it's moving that center of gravity and taking the force down into the case. It still needs to have weight though, so and it will. Like, it's funny that they're not talking about it, but yeah, I mean, basically it's going to be the same argument more or less that I've been making about the Bridge thing, which is yes, it turns your iPad into something that weighs as much as a laptop. It also makes your iPad a laptop, and then you take it off the case and now it's not a laptop anymore. And that's the beauty of it. And that's why you use something like this, is because your laptop doesn't do this unless you have a PC convertible laptop or a Surface or something like that, right? But like your MacBook won't do this. So, but people will definitely take shots at it and be like, oh, for that, I might as well just, it's just as heavy as a laptop. I should just get a MacBook Pro. But it's not going to be feather light. Let's just be clear. It's not. The math, yeah. You can't argue with the subtraction.
It's also not going to have the versatility of the Folio or the Smart Keyboard where you can like fold the keyboard back around to the back.
Exactly.
It's not going to work like that.
And I got to say, like, I think more people may end up doing what I've been doing all along, which is I have a Folio case for it, and then I have a keyboard. And I use the keyboard when I want to use the keyboard, but I don't generally travel or even walk around with that keyboard on my iPad. I only do that, like, back in the old times when I would go to a cafe to write. You remember those times, right, Dan?
Seems like yesteryear.
I would sometimes, you know, I would bring a keyboard case and the iPad, whether it was the Bridge or the Smart Keyboard Folio. Like, that's a scenario where I would do that, or walking into the backyard to write out in the backyard, something like that. But like around the house, I just take that off and put on the Folio, or you could just leave it with no case. But I
carry the Smart Keyboard with, I always have the Smart Keyboard on the iPad pretty much because the Smart Keyboard is so light.
Yeah. Well, this
it
is
really doesn't matter, but yeah,
you'll see, it bothers me. It matters to me. So I don't do that. But this, what I'm saying is this will matter more.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, if you want the ultimate, there is a reason Apple's providing a range of options too, right? Because now you don't have to necessarily say like, well, that's too heavy, I don't want it for you. Then just get a lighter keyboard, right? Like, there are other options. But, you know, it's, if you want something that's going to be, got the trackpad and got all that, like, you know, really clicky key goodness in it, then yeah, you're going to have to make a trade-off there.
Clicky
it's all
key
about
goodness.
Trade-offs.
The, I wanted to mention two iPhone and iPad related things. The mystery of the U1 chip in the iPad Pro, where a lot of people were speculating there would be a U1 chip in the iPad Pro. There isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I said, maybe even on this podcast, I said there isn't. And when I say something like that, it's because I know, right? And then there was a story like a week later that was like, confirmed, no U1 chip in iPad Pro. I'm like, guys, there isn't, right? Like, or is there a, no, there isn't. There isn't. There isn't. I think it's an interesting question about why there isn't. And also, like, why there were rumors and speculation that there was, which, you know, definitely I have heard, how shall I phrase this? I think this product had a U1 in it. Let's just say it that way. I think at one point in the development, they expected it would have a U1, and it doesn't. And why? I don't know. But here's my question, which is what is going on with the U1 and ultra wideband at Apple that they shipped it in the iPhones 11 and didn't essentially talk about it because whatever reason they put it in there, which is AirTags, didn't ship. If they thought they were going to put it in this iPad and then didn't, what does that mean? Is it a softening toward ultra wideband? Is it some issue with AirTags? Is it that they want to hold on to those U1s because they want to make sure they have enough to put in phones where it's more relevant?
Maybe they just think maybe they think it's more relevant in the iPhone. The iPad didn't have more than one camera until this model. So maybe they're just like,
AirTags aren't shipping yet. They can save some margin by leaving it out.
If there is indeed, as we've discussed in previous episodes, another iPad update coming in the fall, maybe it's in those.
Save it for that. Yeah. And then related to this is there are still rumors out there that they're going to ship a iPhone SE or 9, SE, next week maybe even.
Yeah. I kept betting on days this week, and I was like wrong every day. So.
Yeah. You bet on every day?
I started by betting on Monday. I felt pretty good about Monday. Didn't happen. So, yeah. And then I was like, Tuesday for sure. Well, maybe Wednesday. They released products on Wednesday. Could be Thursday. Thursday's rare, but it could happen.
I asked the question, will that have a U1 chip in it or not?
I don't know what that... It's... So essentially, that device is a iPhone 7/8 size device.
Yes.
With newer internals than a 7 or 8?
I would say it'll have the A13 in it. Or A14? Okay. What's the latest A? A14?
It's the 14's in the 11, right?
Yeah, so that God, one. I think it'll have that one. The one that's
a meaningless statement. Yeah, 14 one, is in the 11.
Oh, yeah, it's where's the 3? Third base.
No, I'm lying. It's the 13. I'm full of crap.
It's the 13. Okay, so the 13, because it's the A12Z that's in
In the new iPad.
iPad, which is, yeah.
Just okay. An A12.
So, yeah. So I imagine it will be based on everything Apple has ever done in the past. It'll be the A13, because they're then not going to update it for 5 years.
Right, exactly.
So they want it to be the latest, and it'll be the latest and greatest, but in the shape of an iPhone 7 and 8.
Yeah, which means Touch ID, but no Face ID. It means probably only one camera, I would assume. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's any. That's the question. Is there's always like a little mystery over like, are there any other things that they consider so crucial to the next 5 years of having a phone that they would need to build it in now? Right. And the U1 is a good question, but I just am not,
because the U1 feels, or at least for them to brand it and all that, at some point they felt that it was an important future product direction and that they were going to be doing a lot of ultra wideband stuff, and maybe they still are. And I'd say if that's the case, it should probably be in any new phone that they ship in 2020, including the SE. Like, that they should just put it in there, because what they don't want is to have, they're going to, because if it still matters to them, they're going to roll out a bunch of features that use this thing. It would be kind of a shame that this one product that's in their line for all this time doesn't do all of those things.
It's just so a big if about like what exactly the utility of it is beyond what they've shown.
That's why I bring it up. Right? This is the mystery. If AirTags is a thing and it's going to be used, because they can, knowing what we know about UWB, it could be for AirTags, precision support for AirTags, because you'll be able to use Bluetooth LE to get it a general sense. But it'll tell you, with UWB, it would tell you exactly where it is. Car unlock, they're talking about this car key thing, and that they can use the NFC for that, but they can also use ultra wideband for that. And that's actually one of the great uses of ultra wideband, is it can't be spoofed because it's a time of flight thing. So currently with a Tesla, if you do I wrote about this in that UWB piece I wrote, but like, you can intercept somebody's Tesla key transmission if they're like at a restaurant, and then you transmit that to a repeater that's by the car, and then the car sees the key and says, oh, you're by, I'll unlock because you're here and you're not there. It's a lie. And then they steal your car. Theoretically, I think it has been done, but like, theoretically, UWB can't do that because it's time of flight. It's speed of light. It knows how far away you are. And because of the antenna, it actually knows where you are. So if you tried to repeat the radio signal, it wouldn't make sense, because it would still take the speed of light to get there, and then it would know you're far away. That's a great feature for car unlock, and I know that Apple, or at least all the reports are, is working on this whole car key kind of like standard and all of that. So that would be, again,
I don't know. Even that, I'm not convinced, just because the rate at which people buy cars and the rate at which car manufacturers put things in, like if you didn't have it in a phone
But if it's an initiative, I mean, this is the thing. If it's an initiative at Apple that we have all these things that were coming that are going to be based on the U1, do you really want the iPhone SE sitting out there for years?
I just feel like, you know, again, we've sat around with 6 months with the U1 chip and basically crickets. And it's like, if they were really that excited about it, I mean, I guess June would probably be the time for them to start peeling back the curtain, traditionally.
Right. Well, AirTags,
normal year.
AirTags is a mystery product, because it seems
AirTags
to exist, but it hasn't shipped.
It 100% exists.
And who needs it now? No one.
Mike made a great point about that on Upgrade. It's like, you're not leaving the house.
No one's taking their stuff anywhere.
Yep, that's a good point. And that's a product they can hold, like, unlike the iPads, right? If the question was, should they have released those iPads the other month? And the answer is, well, they can't let them sit. They won't be relevant anymore. Well, but the AirTags, it doesn't really matter, right? Those products will be the same if they release them in September as it was if they released them last year.
It's just... iPad complaints baffle me, because it's like, you know what they did is they literally just swapped in components in the existing iPad production line.
But like they were limited.
That meant they stopped making the old ones. So right. Like they just continued making an iPad Pro. Like that's
right.
That so there's no like timing. Eventually you jigger the production line and that's it. Like you don't have a choice.
Sure.
You got to roll that product out.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't just, you don't want to leave them just sitting in a warehouse because then, you know, the closer you get, if they have, for example, if they have another iPad planned for the fall,
sure.
The closer it gets, the more annoying that's going to be,
but
right?
But also, like you've run out of iPads. June, you've run out of iPads.
Right.
Like,
yes,
well, why is there no new
problem.
iPad Pro?
Yeah.
Reasons.
Yeah.
That they're stacking up. And it, like, no, you would never do that, which is why they did it. But you're right. AirTags, just keep making them, put them in a holding
put them in a box
somewhere.
They'll have plenty of they won't be supply constrained in theory. I don't know. I wrote a little bit this week that my Macworld column was about, you know, all the stuff that's leaked out basically that we are pretty sure Apple is doing but that haven't shown up yet, which included the AirTags, includes the iPhone SE and the potential the over the ear AirPods, which also seem to be a thing that probably exists. But yeah, I mean, it's also a question of timing on all this stuff. Like, do you release products now? I guess it really depends, right? Like, again, AirTags, if they were ready to go, you could release them now, but people would just be like, I don't need this. iPads, like, you got them, you can't hold them, so you might as well release them. The iPhone one is more puzzling to me, and I wonder just some of that is supply chain slowdowns. You know, those were supposed to maybe supposed to launch at the end of March or earlier in April, and they just were like, well, all the factories in China shut down, we didn't have the quantity that we wanted, and we don't have to rush on this, right? Like, again, that's not like, you know, a new flagship iPhone where it's, if it doesn't show up in September, everybody will freak out. It's just a mid-cycle refresh of a low-end model. If it's there, great. If it's not there, it's the only person it's hurting, as far as I can tell, is John Moltz, because he really wants a new phone.
I know. And he'll settle.
You know what?
He'll settle
he'll
for this one.
He'll buy it anyways, eventually. That's the point. So it doesn't really matter. You're not even hurting him, except for emotionally.
Yeah. I still think it's going to be called the SE, by the way. Why would you not?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, based on that screen protector that showed up the other week, I would not bet against it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we soldier on, don't we?
Indeed we do. Maybe next week we'll have something to talk about. Something else. Something new.
We'll always have something to talk about.
That's true.
Talk about footnotes some more.
Yeah. Footnotes. Ebooks. There you go.
Yep.
We're pivoting this podcast.
Yeah. Footnotes and ebooks from now on. All right. Well, thank you to everybody out there for supporting Six Colors. We really appreciate it. The lights are on because of you. And until next week. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.